Welcome to the Loving Wellness Podcast, your compass to embracing a holistic approach to health, one that extends love not only to your body and spirit, but also ripples outward to those around you. I'm your host, Ava Nori, a registered dietitian and your wellness BFF. Together, we'll dive deep into all the ways you can practice loving wellness in your own life and tap into the healthiest, happiest, most aligned version of yourself through both solo episodes and conversations with experts in many fields. Let's get into the show. Hello, hello. Welcome back to the Loving Wellness Podcast. I'm so excited to be back with another solo episode this Wednesday. And today I will be doing a Q&A, which I'm so excited about because I haven't done one in forever. And I got a lot of really great questions this time on Instagram. I asked you all to submit your questions for this podcast episode, and I actually got quite a few, so I might have to make this a two-parter because I don't want to make this super long, which if you've been listening for a while, I tend to say at the beginning of every solo episode and then go on to speak for almost an hour. So we're not going to do that today. I will try to split it if it gets too long, or maybe I'll just stop at a part that feels good and then do the rest in 2 weeks in the next solo episode. So I'm excited. I hope you're all having a lovely, lovely week. Happy almost February. That's insane. It is Sunday, January 28th when I'm recording this, and I can't believe that January is almost over. It feels like New Year's Eve was literally yesterday. I don't know if anyone else is feeling that way, but I hope you're all doing well regardless of how quickly time is moving, and especially after my last solo episode on slowing down, I hope you've all taken some time to slow down recently and do something for you. If you haven't listened to that episode, I highly recommend it. I think a lot of people are in the same boat this year of really wanting to focus on nervous system regulation, slowing down, addressing the stress in their lives, or maybe it's just the world I'm in right now because I talk about it so much with so many of my clients and it's something I'm focused on myself. But that episode is one of my favorite solo episodes I've done. And if you haven't listened to it, make sure to do so. And yeah, with that, I'm just going to get started with answering these questions. If you're not following me on Instagram and want to be included in the next Q&A or just be updated on episodes for the podcast, updates, anything else, I post a lot of wellness content over there, nutrition, lifestyle, mental health, spirituality, mindset, self-growth, all the things. Go ahead and follow me over there at Ava Nori Wellness. And with that being said, let's get into some of these questions. So this first one is tips for balancing hormones. And I feel like maybe I've answered this before, but a lot of my approach has changed with this, and I am very focused right now on women's health and hormones. So I think that there's, I mean, so many things to say about this. The first thing I'll say is that if you're in fight or flight and stressed out all the time, sort of to the point of slowing down, addressing stress, and regulating your nervous system, if you're not doing these things, that is going to be a really hard place to start with balancing your hormones. I think that is actually the number one thing you can do, is to really slow down, slowing down your workouts, slowing down your pace of life, slowing down your mind, slowing down kind of everything in life, and really addressing the things going on in your day-to-day that are not conducive to that, and finding ways to address stress throughout your day, and finding as many times and ways to get into that more rest and digest parasympathetic state as possible is so important for hormones. When there's a hormonal imbalance happening in your body, more times than not, whether you have an irregular cycle or maybe you're dealing with estrogen dominance or whatever it is, something is going on in your body where it doesn't feel safe, especially if you're having cycles where you're not ovulating. Or maybe you don't have a cycle at all, you've lost your period. I don't know, you know, the specifics of the hormonal imbalance, but more times than not, your body doesn't feel safe enough to be fertile and have a child. That's why there's all these irregularities with our cycle when these things happen when we're in fight or flight all the time. So addressing that and really finding ways to slow down and tell your body that it's safe is so crucial. So not to be a broken record, but really, if you haven't listened to that solo episode on how to slow down, that is full of tips and tools and ways to actually slow down, even when you live a busy life. And it's very, very relevant to the conversation on balancing hormones. I also think there's something to be said about really making sure you're doing things that are supportive for blood sugar balance. Your blood sugar is intricately connected to your hormones, and a big root cause of hormonal imbalances is blood sugar imbalance. So doing things to keep that blood sugar balanced, whether it's taking a little walk after your meals, eating balanced meals. I talk about my foundational four rule with meals, making sure every meal has a source of protein. And I would recommend doing a more bioavailable form, so animal protein, and then a source of healthy fats, a source of high quality carbohydrates. So something like a sweet potato or some brown rice, and then a source of fiber too. So usually I would say that that's in the form of vegetables. I think vegetables should be included in basically every meal. So that's basically the blueprint. You can check my TikTok and Instagram out for more tips on how to balance blood sugar and how to actually use the foundational four rule to create a meal that's balanced. And then another thing I'll say on blood sugar balance is making sure that you're eating the fiber and protein in your meal first. So whether that's eating the chicken and vegetables on your plate first before you eat the potatoes, for example, eating the protein-rich food and the fiber-rich food first in a meal has been shown to blunt a blood sugar spike. So that's another easy tip that you can use. There's so many other tips for blood sugar balance that could be its own episode, but those are just some things that come to mind. And then a few other quick things for hormone balancing. I think eating enough is so important and not talked about. So if you're under eating, and this is something I go over with all my clients as well, you are not going to see many improvements in your health. Your body, your hormones require sufficient fuel in the form of nutrient-dense whole foods, high quality foods, not just calories, but also nutrients. So you have to be eating enough and eating enough high quality foods to also show your body that it's safe, that it has enough nutrients stored away to carry out proper functioning. When your body's in a starved state, when you're under eating, having balanced hormones, having kids, for example, being fertile is not the top priority. The top priority is getting enough fuel. So your body goes into this low-grade chronic fight or flight state, and it's a huge stress on the body. So if you want to have balanced hormones, if you want to have a healthy period, you're going to have to eat enough. And it goes along with addressing your stress. You have to also be in a place where you're not overly chronically stressed out for your body to feel safe. And eating enough is another way to prevent added stress, because when you're under eating, that is a stress to the body, like I was saying. And then another thing I've been into a lot lately that's very supportive for hormones is circadian biology and really syncing up our bodies to the circadian rhythms of nature. So two things have been huge for me for this: getting morning sunlight in the morning around sunrise, and also around like an hour after sunrise, which is this time called UVA rise, where UVA light starts to shine through. UVA light is so, so important for hormones. It basically indicates to us when we get UVA light to create hormones, whether it's thyroid hormones, sex hormones. That UVA light is a signal to our bodies to then downstream create these hormones and have proper hormone functioning. So when we're not getting outside in the mornings at these times, our bodies get a little confused because we're indoors all day, right? And we're not outside getting the proper light signals that our bodies need to know what time it is and to know what hormones and what metabolic processes to do when. So when we do get that sunlight intentionally at the right times, it's really, really supportive for hormonal balance, but also so many other things: for sleep, for energy levels, for mood. So I've been having really great results with that lately. And then I also equally think it's just as important to block blue light at night. And this is something that I've been much more diligent about lately, and it's been really helpful personally, but also for people I've been working with, for my clients. So getting a good quality pair of blue light blocking glasses that are the amber color that block the correct blue light wavelengths, and wearing those right when the sun sets instead of, you know, an hour before bed, has been a game changer. And I know these glasses aren't the sexiest thing in the world, where you're wearing like orange glasses basically, and the sun sets so early. So I'm like wearing them at 5:30 p.m. these days until the rest of the night. But honestly, I get such better sleep when I do it, and I feel like everything in my body just works better. I can wake up in the morning so much more easily, and it's just been really, really helpful for my own health. And this could be a whole solo episode in and of itself, but I have been dealing with some of my own health things recently, and it was all sparked by a parasite I got this summer. I think I kind of alluded to this in another solo episode, or maybe I just actually shared the whole story. I don't think I did though, but I basically have been dealing with some of my own things, and this has been really supportive for my own symptoms with everything, and more on that later. That, like I said, will be its own solo episode in the future. But circadian biology, super important too. And the last thing I'll say is addressing your gut and really getting to the bottom of your gut health. If there's any imbalances or dysbiosis in your gut, any small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, candida overgrowth, really addressing those things, because that has many effects on our hormones. And a lot of hormonal imbalances can actually be traced back to the gut, and gut health, or lack thereof, gut imbalances are a big root cause as well of hormonal imbalances. And the actual last thing I'll say on this topic, I know I keep talking, but hormones and imbalances in our hormones are usually not the root cause. They are the effect of something else happening. And there are many different root causes, like I've been alluding to. One of them being blood sugar imbalances, one of them being imbalances in your circadian rhythm, gut issues, metabolic dysfunction, mitochondrial dysfunction. A whole nother topic I didn't even bring up is environmental toxins and heavy metals and how these impact our hormones. There is a whole class of chemicals called endocrine disrupting chemicals, and these are the things that are in our products, in our skincare products, in our makeup, in our food products. I mean, they're really all over. And when we put too many on and in our body and are overexposed to these things, they have really detrimental effects on our hormones as well. So that could be another root cause. And usually a hormonal imbalance is a result of a combination of a lot of these things. So healing our hormones really comes when we address these root causes. And that is the actual last thing I'll say on that. And maybe I should just make a whole episode on that. If you're interested, please let me know if I should elaborate on hormone balancing and how to support healthy hormones, because it's something I am very passionate about, if you couldn't tell. Okay, next question is favorite anti-inflammatory foods. So this is a great question. I have so many, so I'll just kind of list them off. The first one I would say is berries. Berries are such a superfood. Blueberries, blackberries, raspberries, even strawberries. They're so rich in antioxidants and polyphenols, and they're very anti-inflammatory. And the same thing goes for leafy greens and cruciferous vegetables. So things like Swiss chard, collard greens, kale, broccoli, cabbage, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts. These are all really high in, once again, antioxidants that are anti-inflammatory, and they're also really supportive, the green leafy cruciferous vegetables, for estrogen detoxification. So kind of going back to the last question, if you have estrogen dominance, that could be another really great way to support that, but they're also very anti-inflammatory. And then I also love turmeric. That's honestly one of my favorite spices to cook with. I batch cook chicken a lot, and I'll always cook it with turmeric, because turmeric has a compound in it called curcumin, and that is a very anti-inflammatory compound really great for fighting low-level inflammation in the body, kind of like systemic inflammation, but also really helpful for healing inflammation in the gut and reducing that. And I find it's super easy to just use it as a spice in whatever I'm cooking. So that's another one. And ginger, same thing goes for that one. Lots of anti-inflammatory, antioxidant properties in ginger. And then another one is fatty fish. I love salmon. I think it's such a superfood, and any fatty fish, mackerel, tuna, salmon, sardines, but really just making sure to have low mercury fish if you're going to have fatty fish. But these fish are so high in omega-3 fatty acids and are really great for reducing inflammation in the body as well. And then another favorite for fighting gut inflammation specifically is bone broth. And I mean, bone broth is great for so many things. There's lots of great collagen. It has these awesome compounds called chondroitin and glucosamine, which are specifically really great for fighting inflammation in the joints and preventing and helping to reduce the symptoms of osteoarthritis. But also, bone broth is really good for your gut and reducing gut inflammation. So that's something I've been personally incorporating a lot more lately and feel really good drinking. And I also just love it as a snack, something to sip on throughout the day. It's really warming, especially for this time of year. And I personally have grown to love the way it tastes. So I do sip on it, but you could even use it in soups and stews. Like I said, like instead of using chicken stock, chicken broth, using bone broth or something like that can be really easy and a great way to increase the amount of bone broth you're getting. Okay, next question is favorite current wellness trend. I love this question, and the first thing that popped in my mind when I saw this was I truly love how much it's been emphasized to eat more protein. I think a lot of people, a lot of women especially, are under-eating protein, and it's causing a lot of the issues that we're seeing. Going back to the hormone conversation, if you're not eating enough protein, you are not going to have healthy, balanced hormones. If you're not eating enough protein, your blood sugar is going to be a wreck. If you're not eating enough protein, you will not be able to build muscle. And muscle is so important for healthy aging, but also for building bone density. And in and of itself, if you don't eat enough protein, your bones are not going to be as strong. There are so many reasons to eat more protein. And I find that it's really one of those tips and things that you can implement so easily that makes the biggest change in how you feel. I have clients that start implementing a higher protein breakfast and start hitting that 30 grams at breakfast every day, and they tell me that their world has changed. Like, they feel so much better. And the same thing happened to me when I started implementing that. So I think it's really, really important. I don't think all we need to be eating is protein. And of course, there's a balance. I know the carnivore diet is huge right now, and I am by no means endorsing that. But I do think most of us, especially us women, could use a little more protein. Okay, someone asked about hypothyroidism and how to heal from hypothyroidism and manage it. I want to do a whole episode on thyroid health and hypothyroidism. It's something very near and dear to my heart right now, something I've been working on with a lot of women and have dealt with myself. So I think I'm going to defer to a whole episode on that. But everything I talked about in the first question, tips for hormone health, I mean, thyroid hormone is a hormone, and a lot of those tips for balancing hormones. I know the person was probably referring to sex hormones, but they go for thyroid health too, and they all are relevant for thyroid. So the things that I said, like slowing down, eating enough, blood sugar balance, addressing underlying gut issues and infections, also reducing our environmental toxin exposure. So in the same way that there are endocrine disrupting chemicals, there's a whole subset of endocrine disrupting chemicals that are thyroid disrupting chemicals, which are specifically harmful to our thyroid hormone binding to the receptors they need to bind to. And I think that's something to also be aware of. And then there's a lot of different nutritional strategies. So I think, like I said, I'm going to get into that in a whole other solo episode. But the one thing I'll say right now for nutrition for thyroid health, A, eating enough protein is super important, like I've been saying. But B, assessing your iodine status is super crucial, especially if your thyroid issues are not autoimmune related. So if you have Hashimoto's, that is an autoimmune disease. But if you have sluggish thyroid, low thyroid hormone production, something's going on, your TSH is high. TSH is that thyroid stimulating hormone. It's a blood marker that's used to assess your thyroid health. So if you have thyroid issues, I'm assuming maybe your TSH is high. I would definitely find a way to assess iodine status, whether it's through a blood iodine, you know, serum or plasma iodine, or there's an iodine loading, an iodine urine loading test that you can do to assess your iodine status, because that is huge. And if you have an iodine deficiency, that shows up as hypothyroidism. So you might not have overt thyroid disease. It might just be an iodine deficiency that needs to be corrected. Iodine is essential for thyroid hormone. T3, which is the active form of thyroid hormone, is triiodothyronine. So there's three iodines in one molecule of thyroid hormone. So it's that important, and we really do need it for proper thyroid function. So I would assess that as well. But once again, like I said, I'll get into all this in a solo episode on thyroid. I think that would be really interesting, especially because it's something so many women deal with, and it's been top of mind a lot for me lately and for a lot of my clients. Okay, I'm going to answer a few more and then wrap it up for today, and I'll answer the rest in another episode. So the next question is holistic tips for acid reflux. This is another great question. So many people deal with acid reflux, and oftentimes people think it's because of too much stomach acid. But the first thing I'll say is we need to figure out the root cause of why you're having acid reflux. And oftentimes it's because of low stomach acid. And that can happen for a number of reasons. One of the biggest reasons for having low stomach acid is gut issues. So small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, or SIBO, having overgrowth of that not beneficial bacteria in your gut, is a cause of low stomach acid. And then that can cause reflux symptoms. So addressing that and seeing what is going on in your gut is really important to start to get to the root cause. Another big root cause I see is hypothyroidism. So speaking of the thyroid, that is very linked to stomach acid production. So when you're hypothyroid, when your thyroid is functioning more slowly, then that causes a decrease in stomach acid production and can cause reflux as well. And so in the same way that dealing with hormonal imbalances, you have to get to the root, same thing goes for reflux. It's usually a symptom of something. It's not the root cause. And if it is because of low stomach acid, addressing that with doing things that are going to support stomach acid production, such as slowing down at meals, relaxing at meals, taking deep breaths before you eat, eating intentionally, which is something I teach and talk about so much, intentional eating, but also doing things that are going to support stomach acid in other ways, like including some sort of digestive support, whether that's having some digestive bitters before meals. You could do apple cider vinegar. That's not going to help you if you have high stomach acid, though. So that's why I'm talking about getting to the root cause, because if you're having heartburn or acid reflux and it's not due to low stomach acid, adding apple cider vinegar is going to add more fuel to the fire. And the same thing goes for betaine HCl. That's something that is used a lot in the integrative and functional space to support stomach acid when it's low. It's essentially replacing your stomach acid. HCl is hydrochloric acid. So that would be something to explore if you do have low stomach acid. And then there's just some anatomical things, like having lower esophageal sphincter issues, where it's more relaxed in the lower esophageal sphincter, that can cause reflux. And that can even just be due to overeating or eating meals that are too big, that decreases that tone in the sphincter at the lower part of your esophagus. So for some people, it means eating smaller meals more frequently. And another thing nutritionally you could do is reduce foods that are triggers of acid reflux. So things that are spicy, caffeine, chocolate, onions, tomato products, peppermint is even a trigger, carbonated beverages. So that could be something you can do to reduce symptoms. Also, not eating 3 hours before bed and not laying down after you eat are just some simple things that you can do as well to reduce symptoms. Oh, and alcohol is another trigger. So I would reduce alcohol intake if you're dealing with reflux. And then incorporating certain supplements can be really supportive. It depends on what the root cause is, but some supplements that help people with any kind of reflux are those mucilaginous herbs. They can be very supportive for soothing the upper GI tract and your digestive system in general. So things like aloe and marshmallow root and slippery elm. There's a lot of supplements out there that have a combination of these products. And another one I really love is DGL supplements. That's like a type of licorice, and that can be really supportive for reflux symptoms as well. And I talked about this for a second when I was talking about supporting stomach acid production, slowing down at meals, but addressing stress and reducing stress in general can be really helpful for reflux. And oftentimes people will see an increase in their symptoms when they are more stressed out. And there's a direct correlation. So reducing stress is going to help with a lot of different symptoms, but reflux specifically for sure. Okay, these last couple are less related to like food and health. And I mean, they're of course related to health because health in my eyes includes a lot of different aspects of life, but they're not related to like nutrition specifically. So the first one is what to do when you feel overwhelmed. A few things come to mind with this one. The first one is just the reminder and the mindset shift that life isn't so serious. And I have to remind myself of this a lot because I tend to get overwhelmed easily. I can get stressed out easily. And I need to remind myself that life doesn't have to be so serious and I don't need to take it so seriously and take every little thing so seriously. I deserve to enjoy my life. I deserve to have fun while I do things. And that is a constant practice that I'm trying to implement more and more, but it really is an important reminder not to take life so seriously. And then another thing that's a little more practical, I mean, that is practical, but a tip, a tool, I guess, would be this practice that is called freeform writing. I've talked about this on the podcast before. It is the thing that I do every single time I get overwhelmed, basically, and I always feel better after I do it. I don't always feel 100% stress-free and in pure bliss, but I always feel better. And I can say that wholeheartedly. Basically, all you do is, it's a mind dump, right? You take a piece of paper. I like to light a candle before I do it. And I let myself write out everything that's overwhelming me, everything that's stressing me out, all the negativity I'm feeling or that I've picked up throughout the day. And it's not just for when I'm feeling overwhelmed. It could be when I'm feeling really stressed out, negative, sad, whatever it is that isn't how I want to feel. I just write it all out on this piece of paper and I just let myself write whatever needs to be written. I don't judge it. I don't even read it back. And then I grab that piece of paper when I'm done and I feel good and feel like I've released enough and I burn it and I burn it and I throw it away. And it basically feels like all that negativity, all the overwhelm just dissipates into that fire. And it's really fun just watching that piece of paper burn. I think that that's a really important part of it. You could just do a mind dump like in your journal, but I find that burning it really helps to release the stress on an energetic level. So that's something I like to do when I'm overwhelmed. And then another thing that came to mind when I read this question was taking a nice long shower, one of those everything showers. And ladies, you know what I'm talking about, where you shave your legs and you do your hair mask and you do a nice body scrub, you do all the things. I always feel better after that type of shower. I feel better after any type of shower, but especially when I'm feeling overwhelmed, it can be really nice to take a break and do something for myself. So any form of self-care really, but that type of shower just does it for me, which is kind of random, but that is something I sometimes like to do when I'm overwhelmed. It helps give my mind a break because I kind of let my mind go when I'm in the shower, but also it feels productive, so I don't feel like I've wasted time, if that makes sense. It feels like a productive thing to do with my time. So that's another random suggestion for when you're feeling overwhelmed. And then writing lists. I am a to-do list freak. I literally have a to-do list for every single day of my life. I have a weekly to-do list, and then I have daily ones, and then I have my monthly. It's a lot, but that's how my Virgo rising brain works. I really love organization and I love lists. But even if you're not a list freak like me, I think there's a lot of value in writing everything that is overwhelming you out that you need to do to just make sense of it. So it's not just all in your brain. So similar to the mind dump thing, actually writing out what you need to do, what's overwhelming you, what needs to get done. Usually for me, overwhelm comes from having too much to do and feeling like there's not enough time to do it, or there's something in the way, or there's all these different things going on and I can't seem to get a grip. So writing those things out, whether it's priorities or responsibilities or what I actually need to do, can be really helpful as well to just have it on paper and be able to see it. Okay, we're reaching 30 minutes, so this is going to be the last question I answer in this one, and then I'm definitely going to be doing a part two, so stay tuned for that in 2 weeks from today. The last question is how to make friends in a new city. This is a topic I love talking about. First and foremost, what I'll say is listen to my podcast episode with Erin Falconer. She's a therapist who wrote the book How to Break Up with Your Friends, but it's not about how to break up with your friends. That's literally one chapter of the book. The book is about adult friendships and navigating adult friendships and how to make new friends and how to let go of friends you don't really want in your life anymore. And it's a really great book. So I would suggest reading that, but also listening to my podcast with her. She had really great insight on this question in that episode. It's episode 22 of the show. I also have Ilana Dunn from Seeing Other People coming on the show next week. That is the next guest episode that'll be released. And she is a dating and relationship expert. I'm sure you know her. If you haven't heard of Ilana before, then you are in for a treat next week. And if you have, then you're probably really excited to hear she's coming on the show. She's amazing. And we talked about dating quite a bit and romantic relationships, but we also touched on friendships and how to make new friends and where to go to make new friends. So I'm excited for that episode to come out, and stay tuned for that one next week so that you can get her answer to this question. And to give you a little sneak peek, one of the things we talked about was putting yourself in places to meet people that you're going to be aligned with. So if you're into wellness, going to wellness events in your city, putting yourself out there, going to yoga classes, and I know a lot of people say this, it's like, just go to things you're interested in and you'll find people there. I think there's a little more nuance. I think you have to put yourself out there and talk to people at these things. If you go to a yoga class and just keep to yourself and then go home, you're not going to make new friends. So there's that part that you have to put in a little bit of work as well. But going to events especially, I think, is a great way, because I think that attracts people who are also going to the event to meet new friends and meet new people and make new connections. So I think that's really a great way to put yourself out there, especially in a new city. And I think also when you move to a new city, like using the connections you have, asking friends, do you have anyone who lives in this city that you think I would get along with? And using your network to your advantage is another great way to make new friends that isn't so scary, because it feels like they've been vetted almost by someone that you love and care about and are friends with. I brought this up in my conversation with Ilana, which you'll hear next week, but I think you also have to put out the intention that you want new friends, right? Asking for what you want from the universe, from source, from spirit, from God, whatever you want to call it, is really important when it comes to manifesting what you want in this world, whether that is new friends or maybe it's a new job, maybe it's more money. I get into this in the solo episode I did at the beginning of the year, how to manifest your goals in 2024, where I got into manifestation and creating a life you love. And if that life includes new friends or new connections, I think that should be part of what you're asking for and putting out into the universe, just like any other goal that you have or any other intention you have for this time of your life. And not to keep directing you to other episodes, but you can listen to that episode to hear how you can actually start to use energetic laws of the universe and the more spiritual stuff we talk about on here on Loving Wellness to actually call in new friends and manifest the friends that you want in this life. All right, I think that is a good place to stop for this episode. Like I said, I'll be doing a part two in a couple weeks, so stay tuned for that. Stay tuned for my episode with Ilana next week. Lots of exciting stuff coming up and so many awesome guest episodes. I've been interviewing such amazing people. And I've just been so lucky and have felt so just lit up by these conversations. So I'm really excited to share them with you. And we have lots of other exciting solo episodes coming up as well. So stay tuned for all of it. Thank you all for listening and for being here, for supporting the podcast. If you haven't already, if you could leave a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts, that would be very much appreciated. That's how the show gets into the ears of more and more people. And I hope you all have an incredible week, an incredible start to your February. And I will talk to you all in next week's episode. I love you guys.